Morning. It's Labor Day weekend, and you're not at the lake. What happened? You're on your way, aren't you? That's what I thought. It is very odd to me, the things that stick in your mind from your school days. Has this happened to you guys? You have little facts and little tidbits and goofy little things that get lodged in your brain, and somehow 20 years later, it pops back, and you think, where did that come from? Has that ever happened to you all? It happens to me a lot. I have odd things from fourth grade that come to my mind when I'm trying to sleep. I still remember the linking verb song from fourth grade. Does anybody know this song? Is it just me? The linking verb song is to the tune of Jingle Bells, and it's a way for us to remember all the linking verbs, which comes up every day in adult life, right? Every day I find myself wondering, what are the linking verbs in English, right? It happens all the time. Have, has, had, do, does, did, would, could, should, might, shall, is, are, was, were, be, being, been, we find, call these linking verbs. It's in there. Thank you very much. I was very nervous about that part of the sermon. Now that that's over, we can move on calmly. I also remember that at some point, a teacher taught me that a metaphor begins with as and a simile begins with like. Very good. I remember one time we had to take this test, and there were a bunch of comparisons, and we had to put metaphor, simile. That was the test that it was on. Where's Nathaniel Bailey? Is he in here? As an engineer, how often do you think Nathaniel Bailey has to decide whether or not something is a simile or a metaphor? Never, correct, right? It doesn't matter. But we are studying the parables of Jesus, right? Today is the very last Sunday. And when you get down to it, the parables are kind of metaphors, aren't they? So my fourth grade teacher, she did good. She reminded me what a metaphor is. Jesus uses one thing that's familiar, like a mustard seed, and then he compares it to something that's less familiar, the kingdom of heaven. So you kind of latch onto the familiar thing so that you can understand something about the thing that's a little less familiar. In the book of Matthew, just in the book of Matthew, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed seed. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure. The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. The kingdom of heaven is like a homeowner. And then twice, the kingdom of heaven is like a king. So Jesus uses all of these familiar images so that people could go, oh, okay, I kind of understand what you're saying. I understand the concept, what the kingdom of heaven is. Except I just realized that Jesus uses the word like, so these are similes and not metaphors. So now I have to apologize to my fourth grade teacher, right? Let's read from the text. Matthew chapter 20 is where we are today. Go and open up your Bibles if you would. Matthew chapter 20, we're going to start verse 1. We're going to go all the way to verse 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early. Now I'm going to cheat for you guys. Early is 6 a.m. Hold on to that, okay? For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, what time is it? 9. He went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go to work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour, what time is it? And the ninth hour, 3, and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, 5 p.m., he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, why have you been standing here all day doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. So the workers who were hired about the 11th hour, 5 p.m., came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of work and the heat of the day. But he answered them, Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first and the first will be last. When I was a sophomore in high school, I got my first job as a grocery bagger at Hy-Vee. You guys know what Hy-Vee is, the grocery store? They have them in Iowa, I think. Not around here. I was 14, I remember, so there was all kinds of rules about when I could work, and I think my principal had to sign a letter or something like that. But I was very excited about I had income, right? I would get a paycheck, and I would be able to decide what to do with my own money and not ask mom, right? I remember during my interview, the lady that hired me explained that the starting wage, I think this is right, it was 4 1/4. Could that be right? I'm not that old, am I? Goodness gracious. I'm pretty sure it's 4 1/4. Woo! But I remember she said that after 90 days, there was like an evaluation time, right, where they would tell me how I'm doing, and at that time, they would decide whether or not I would get a little raise. I mean, I think it was a dime. You know, it wasn't anything substantial. But you better believe that on day 90, I was knocking on her door saying, where's my evaluation? Let's get this going, right? It wasn't because I was very interested in my performance as an employee, I promise. It was just because I was assuming I was going to get a little 10-cent raise, which, I mean, when you're working 10 hours, it's an extra dollar, wow. You know, not very significant, but it was important to me. It was probably a little presumptuous of me to go up into her office and say, hey, it's time. But it was something that I was promised, and I wanted what I was promised. It makes sense, right? There's a little bit of that in this story that we just read, this parable. So there's 5 groups of workers. They all get hired to work in a vineyard, and all 5 are told that they will get a denarius, right? A denarius is sort of, it's not a monetary unit, it's an amount of money, it's a day's pay, okay? So when you see denarius, just think a day's pay. Did you guys catch how long a day was, by the way? They started at 6 and they ended at 6, 12-hour day, right? Working in the vineyard, that is a long day. So when it's time for everybody to get their paychecks, the people that are hired first are kind of surprised to see that the people who are hired last get a day's pay, right? A denarius. So they thought in their head, surely that meant the landowner changed his mind, or that he would end up giving them a little extra bonus because they had to do all that extra work, right? It kind of makes sense to me. If I was a worker in the vineyard and I got hired at 6 a.m., I would assume, hey, I'm getting a little extra bonus this morning, right? But everybody gets a denarius, a day's wage. People who work for 12 hours get the same as the people who worked 1. Now, let's just be honest. How many of you all would be a little upset? I would too. Come on. Like, how can you pay them the same amount, right? I think I would be, definitely. But the landlord, this is very important, the landowner gave to everyone what? Exactly what he promised he would give them. And maybe a little more, right? He told the first work crew they would get a denarius, and that's what they got. The landowner seems unfair to the first crew, but he's not. He's actually generous. And I think it's important for us to remember that. The landowner isn't stingy because he pays people exactly what he said he would. He's generous because he gives people bonuses that they don't deserve, right? So this is a parable that we're reading, right? Remember, Jesus uses familiar things, working in a vineyard, to help explain difficult things like the kingdom of heaven. So that means the characters in this story probably represent other things. Jesus isn't talking about, you know, wage equality, right? That's not what this story is about. It's about something else. The kingdom of heaven is like. Jesus is trying to convey to the listeners that his kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, is very different from the kingdom of the world, let's say. I went through a list. There's other things that he says. The kingdom of He says that in order to enter the kingdom, we have to be like little children. A couple times he says the last will be first and the first will be last, the conclusion of this parable that we just heard. He talks about how hard it is for rich people to enter the kingdom of heaven. That had to be an unpopular one right there. The theme here is that God's kingdom is very, very different from the kingdom of the world. That is what Jesus is trying. That's the overall message from all these parables. The kingdom of heaven is very different from the kingdoms of this world. So we have two characters, the generous landowner. Who could that be? God. And then we have the workers who get rewarded, who get a paycheck for their work. Who could that be? Us, right? It's like looking in a mirror here. So God is the generous landowner who pays people a flat rate no matter when they start working for him. And the workers who've been working for a long time under harsh conditions get a little irritated because they would like a bonus. Maybe the old timers get a little irritated at the newcomers because God decides to bless them, right? Give them a little extra. But in the end, we are all paid at least what we're promised. So what's the application here? What do we do with this story? It's not just a good, you know, a bedtime story. It's not a fairy tale. It's Jesus is telling the story to teach us something. So what is that? I think first of all, it tells us that God is fair, right? He gives justly whatever is coming to us. And what is so interesting to me, did the landowner come and measure the baskets of grapes that the workers collected and then give them pay based on how many grapes they collected? There's nothing of that in this story. He lines them all up and he pays them when he says he'll pay them. Their payment is not dependent on the amount of work that they do for him. It's a flat rate. It seems like the reward comes more from the decision to work and not from the amount of work that you actually did. An hour or 12, the reward is the same. You guys know, I worked as a missionary for 10 years. We lived in Italy, which sounds nice, and it is nice. It's a nice place to live. But it was a very hard 10 years. It was very difficult. And I remember we would come back every couple of years to visit with churches and people that supported our work in Italy. And, man, people treat us like royalty. You know, like, oh, the missionaries are in town. Let's let him speak. Let's take him out to dinner 100 times. Let's furnish a house where they can live. All these things happen to us. And it was very easy for us to go, well, I guess we kind of earned this, right? You know, we're sacrificing away from grandma and grandpa. Maybe it's a little right that, you know, we take a little backpacking every now and then, right? It's a temptation for me to think, hey, I worked hard and I earned this royal treatment. But what do we just read? That God's economy isn't really based on that, is it? It's not based on what I produce. It's based on our decision to follow him to the vineyard. That's it. We don't earn our reward from him based on the number of grapes we bring in. It's because we said yes when we were standing around in the marketplace doing nothing. That's why we get paid. Did you guys notice how many trips the landowner made to the market to get workers? 5 times. Even an hour before quitting time, which I think is kind of, that's a little unusual. You know, you would think at that point, well, we got whoever we got. We'll just see how much we get done today, right? Start over in the morning. But no, the landowner takes 5 trips in the market to hire more people, right up until the very end. It seems like he has a lot of work to do, that even at the last hour, having another group of workers would be a beneficial thing to him. That's what he's thinking. Now, let me ask you guys a question. If you look around at the city of Rockford, Illinois, do you think there might be a lot of work to do? Where do we start, right? You want to talk about crime? Let's talk about crime. No, let's not talk about crime. This is kind of a sad thing for me. This is a tough thing. I'm going to be honest with you. On Tuesday, there's this robot that calls my phone every now and then from the kids' school, you know. Hi, this is a message from RPS 205. To listen, press 1, you know. And it was a woman saying that The students of Guilford High School were placed on lockdown today for about how long it was, an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And everyone is safe, and everyone went back to life as it was. And I get these calls, and I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do with that information? You know, I'm in my office here at the church, and my kids are in lockdown. Okay. Well, then we went home, and we talked about it at the house. I'm like, what does that mean? What happened? And they kind of told me the story, but they said, this drove me berserk. They said, oh, don't worry about it, because it was a soft lockdown. And I said, well, that's great, but what does that mean? He goes, well, a soft lockdown means that we don't actually have to hide in the corner away from the door with the windows closed. It just means that we're locked in the classroom, and even if the bell rings, we have to stay there. So my children know the difference between a hard and soft lockdown and the different procedures for what to do in case someone is busting up the school. That makes me sick. I'm not kidding you. I apologize to my kids that they live in a world where that information is necessary for them to go to school. I hate that. I hate that they can differentiate between a hard and soft lockdown at Guilford High School. And I'm not picking on Guilford. It's like that everywhere, isn't it? Hard and soft lockdown. I need to get off that mailing list. That lady, she just gets me all upset, right? I know. A couple weeks ago, Heidi and I, we spoke with an agency that helps refugees that are coming into Rockford. Did you know there are refugees coming into Rockford? The week that we spoke to this organization, that week, 17 were coming to live here. 17 people. That's a lot. And she sort of explained how it works. How it works is when people apply for refugee status, they are overseas, right? And they live in refugee camps for years. Years. They live in camps. Years. I was like, really? That's a long time to live in a tent and wait for some country somewhere to accept your application as a refugee. So they wait years for a chance to start over. And then this organization gives them an apartment. They give them job help, language help. They just help them figure out how to live in Rockford. They teach them how to ride the bus. They teach them where different organizations are located. And this is the part that blew me away. There are two different programs that they offer. One gives them 3 months of help. One gives them 6 months. Now, Mary Bailey, let's say I take you overseas and you are now a resident of Libya, okay? And you have 6 months to get on your feet and figure out how to live, the language, find a job, everything. I mean, people, I know that this is a hot button political issue, but that is nothing. That is almost any time at all in order for people to get back on their feet. Are you right? Are you with me? 6 months is hardly anything. That's what they get. I don't know. I'm a little nervous talking about this, but we're all friends, right? Mostly, okay? here's what I think. My opinion about what our government does or does not do with refugees has nothing to do with how I treat refugees that show up in Rockford, Illinois. I can absolutely love the immigrant who is coming here from horrible conditions, and I can want in my head my government to close the borders. But it doesn't matter once they're here, because that is a person who needs love. There is like a 99% chance they have never heard of Jesus in their life. And I see that as an opportunity for us to make God's kingdom grow. That's what I think. I remember I lived as an immigrant. I wasn't a refugee, but I was an immigrant. And I remember how scary it was. This is no lie. One of the scariest things I ever had to do in Italy was get my hair cut. I had hair then. Now it's not so much of an issue. But I remember I went to that barber and I thought, I don't know how to say, I don't know, what are some haircut words? Tanya, help me out. Where's she at? Trim, short, long. You know what? I didn't know any of this vocabulary. And I thought, I have no idea what I'm going to come out of this barbershop looking like, right? Just sort of put yourself at his mercy. I was apparently very vain when I lived there that I cared this much, right? But I like just the dumbest, littlest things are scary things for people who have no idea what's going on, like these refugees. I remember there was a family. We showed up at a church one time in Perugia, the city where we studied the language. there's this Chilean woman. She was about this tall. She was just a short little thing. And she came up to us, and she spoke Italian, and I spoke terrible Italian. But we got the opinion, figured out that she wanted to invite us to her house for lunch. Now, put yourself in our shoes. A woman we have never met before in our lives invites us to her home for lunch. We don't know where she lives. We don't have a car to get there. So we're kind of trapped once we're there. We've got three kids running around. So we're sort of like, I guess, what do we do? Yes, okay, we'll go to your house. She had recognized us from the previous week and was hoping we'd come back, and so she invited us. And that woman spoiled us rotten. She opened up this banquet table with Chilean empanadas and all kinds of, like, every dish imaginable. She just wanted to show hospitality to people that, you know, we were strangers to her. And I remember we're sitting in her apartment and we're struggling to communicate, and she's incredibly patient with us and waits for us to conjugate the verbs in our heads before we speak, and then she's not rolling her eyes at us. And I remember, this woman is so kind. I will never she sent us home with food afterward. She took us to the bus stop and explained very clearly how we needed to ride the bus to get back to our house. An incredibly kind woman, and I will never forget that. And I thought, when I go back to America someday, I am going to be like that Chilean woman for somebody that finds themselves in Rockford, Illinois, and is just lost. I was an immigrant, which is a very different category than refugee. You guys with me? I think it's so interesting because we don't have to leave Rockford to tell the nations about Jesus. Y'all see what God is doing? Obviously, we don't stop at refugees. There are tons of other people in this city that need what we have. Man, as leaders of the church, there is not a week that goes by where we don't stop and think, what are we going to do to reach the people of Rockford, Illinois? How are we going to equip the people in our church to go and make disciples? What is it that we need to do? We wrestle with how we communicate the news of God's kingdom to people that have no clue what we're talking about. You guys understand that? There's sort of a line in the sand, and everyone older than that line has this basic cultural understanding of Christianity, even if they've never walked into the church before. They've heard about it, they saw it on TV, they have some sort of respect for it. But anyone under that line, the minute I start talking about God or Jesus, they have no idea what I'm talking about. So we as leaders wrestle with, okay, well, how are we going to communicate to those people? How is it that we take the truths of the gospel and put it in a way for them to understand? We are called to make disciples, and everything that we do has to be focused on making disciples. Everything. Our small groups have to help us make disciples. Children's church has to help us make disciples. The car show has to help us make disciples. Every single thing we do has to get us closer to that goal. The youth group has to help us make disciples. And sometimes that means that I have to put my needs and my preferences and the things that I would like to have to the side, because the number one job is making disciples. Now, the exciting part of this parable to me is that it is never too late to join the work. You can show up an hour before quitting time and you're in. The latecomers don't get any less of a reward than the newcomer. The latecomers don't get any less of a reward than the people who've been around forever. You guys ever talk to somebody who just felt like they were too far gone for Jesus to reach them? I've been a sinner my whole life. You know, what would I do in a church? What would I do with God? You ever talk to anybody like that? I have. They felt like their sin was too great. The changes that they needed to make were too many. Did you guys notice that the landowner asked the people in the markers, the end of the market, to clean themselves up before they came to work? Nope. Did he tell them to figure out why they lazily hung out in the market all day before they got to work? Nope. He just said, want to work? And that invitation to work is open today. Quitting time hasn't shown up yet. The call to God that God has given us to join his kingdom is still open as long as we're alive. That should be what drives us as a church right there. We can tell people, hey, it is not too late. And your reward is going to be the same reward as somebody who's been around here for 100 years. We get to tell them, this is the really cool part. God's kingdom doesn't just affect our eternity. The fact that I am a citizen of heaven doesn't mean my eternity is different. It means that my life here is different now. It's sort of both. It seems sometimes we get this focus on, well, you get to go to heaven, right? You become a Christian, so you get to go to heaven. But it's much, much more than that. We become a Christian because my life is better now. It changes the way things are here, which is amazing. One of the ways that we celebrate the fact that we are workers in the generous landowner's vineyard is by celebrating communion time. We reflect on the fact that it is only through Jesus' sacrifice on the cross that we get to be in this kingdom and enjoy its rewards. Boy, I sure am. I'm not clean enough to be one of God's workers without Jesus. Are you all? So for thousands of years, Christians have gathered to eat the bread, drink the juice, and remember how much it cost God to let us in. Man, it cost him a lot, didn't it? It cost us his son. This morning we're going to have communion family style. You guys saw the trays when you walked in. There's three in the back and there's one down here. When we're done singing this next song, we're going to sing a song together. After we're finished, I'd like everyone to get up, find a tray that's closest to you. I feel like an airline. Look for the exit that's maybe behind you, right? Find the tray that's closest to you and take communion. Just take it right there or bring it back to your seat, whatever you feel most comfortable with. Now, we call it family style, not because we just want everybody to get up and wander around. This is our time to be the family of God. This is the time for us to find somebody who really needs encouragement, and we know it, and to go encourage them. This is the time for us to pray with somebody that you know really could use somebody to pray with them. This is our time for us to go and apologize to someone that you need to apologize to. That's why we have family-style communion. This is where we do our family business. Now, I want everyone to be spies for me. Do you mind? There are going to be some people that are going to have difficulty getting up and moving around. Can you guys find those people and make sure that somebody brings them communion, okay? And by somebody, I mean you bring them communion, okay? Let me be clear. Whatever it is, whatever time you need, that's what we want to encourage you to do this morning. Are you all happy to be workers in his vineyard? Do you all want more people to become workers in his vineyard? Do you want the city of Rockford to change because we decided to make God's kingdom grow? Let's pray. Father, we thank you for